Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
Hey, everybody. Tonight we're debating Harris or never Harris, and we're starting right now with Stephen's opening statement. Thanks for being with us, Stephen. The floor is all yours.
Yeah, I think that right now, I think one of the most important things in America, and I think for the world, is that we all kind of get back on the same page factually about stuff that's actually happened. So I think supporting Harris is important for a few key reasons. And I think the first one is that right now, the Conservative Party in the United States is completely and totally divorced from any type of factual reality. I think that the Democrats, whether you agree or disagree with their policies, are at least more in the real world than the Republicans are. If you want, you can look through the Dominion lawsuit against Fox News, where Fox News literally says over and over again, we're going to lie about the Dominion machines. They do lie about the Dominion machines. The reason why they do that is to keep up with the other false conservative media that's lying about the Dominion machines. And you can see this over and over and over again, whether it's all of the allegations of voter fraud, where Sidney Powell and Giuliani have said that they lied about it, whether it's Trump pushing voter fraud claims that he has been told over and over again are not true. I just think that the fact that conservatives are no longer based in reality is a huge threat to really the world, because it makes it so we can't live in the same reality, so we can't even discuss policies. And instead, we're wasting all of our time debating conspiracies. And that's, I think, one really good reason to support the Democratic Party. On policies, I think supporting the parties or supporting the Democratic Party or the Harris candidacy is also important, because Trump has no policies. Every time he opens his mouth, he just says some random crazy stuff. He's talking about a 10%, 20% tariff on all imports. I don't even know if he fully knows what a tariff is. At times where we're worried about things like inflation, the idea of adding like 10 or 20% of a price tag onto every single good that you buy is absolutely insane. I think that in terms of economic policy or in terms of domestic policy, I think that the Democrats are much more able to get real stuff done rather than just kind of like pander to an audience. For example, Trump ran on building the wall. He had 4 years to build the wall. He didn't build the wall. He had Republicans in both halves of Congress. There's really no excuse for his failures other than blaming the people around him, which I don't know why he wouldn't just do that again the next 4 years that he's in. Spoiler alert. He will do that again. You compare Donald Trump's, you know, saying we're going to do something about China to Biden passing the CHIPS Act because he was able to actually be an effective leader and get Congress to legislate an actual bill. Or if you look at how the Democrats tried to tackle the border problem, where they had a bill and Trump shot it down because he wants to keep the border open for election season. I think it's clear that the Democrats win when it comes to actual policy. And I think Donald Trump as an individual is an abhorrent, amoral, un-American, unpatriotic, treasonous person who tried to weaponize the DOJ. He tried to create fake slates of electors in order to overturn the electoral vote. He basically chair-led violence on January 6th to try to pressure legislators to not certify the vote. And he tried to subvert the peaceful transfer of power, only leaving when at multiple stops, there were other people inside of the administration that basically stopped his attempt to, take over power in the United States to prevent the actual outcome of the last election from coming to fruition. So I think that Harris is a very, very easy choice over Trump, basically, no matter which way you look at it. But yeah, that's my argument.
You got it. Thank you very much for that opening, Stephen. And folks, if it's your first time here at Modern Day Debate, don't forget to hit that subscribe button, as we have many more upcoming debates. And we're going to kick it over to Kim. Thanks for being with us, Kim. The floor is all yours for your opening as well.
Thank you. The reason why you should not vote for Kamala Harris, I think the biggest reason why you should not, is to protect democracy, the very thing that Democrats claim they're constantly trying to protect. Meanwhile, Vice President Kamala Harris ran for president in 2020. She ended up having to drop out early from the race before the first primary vote because her candidacy did not generate any significant support among the Democratic electorate. There was a lack of enthusiasm. There was a lack of confidence in her leadership. Nonetheless, Even without all of that support, she ended up being selected by party elites to be the vice president for Joe Biden. Furthermore, then what Democrats have done is they have squashed any ounce of the ability to have an election. They squashed any candidates that were challenging Joe Biden, unlike Republicans who actually had a primary, trying to primary Donald Trump. We saw numerous candidates going after Donald Trump. Nikki Haley ran a very fierce campaign against him. So did Ron DeSantis. Meanwhile, Democrats actually buried any possible counter to any alternatives to Joe Biden. They then decided to take the guy out to pasture, essentially pushing him aside against his will. They then had no open primary in order to nominate Kamala Harris as the candidate. And they instead, once again, in the same very way that they made her the vice president candidate, is that they just, the party elites from a very top-down structure without the support of the American people, without the support of their Democratic voters, decided to anoint Kamala Harris as the candidate. If you care about democracy, even if you like Kamala Harris, to support that type of anti-democratic behavior is signing off on this happening over and over and over again. To agree to this, maybe you like Kamala Harris today, maybe she is the person that you think you agree with her policies, but the fact that Democrats have done it in this very undemocratic way, you're paving the way for this sort of authoritarian top-down form of leadership that the next time the candidate that you don't like could end up being the one nominated. Although I will say that the vast majority of the voters do not like Kamala Harris, so she is not a particularly popular candidate. She has the lowest approval rating of any vice president ever in the history of this nation since polling has come out, with a net negative rating of negative 17. So Kamala, if you care about democracy, if that's something that you genuinely want to preserve in this nation, then you cannot support the way that the Democratic Party has gone forward nominating their candidate.
Thank you very much for that opening as well. Folks, want to let you know we're going to have roughly 1 hour and 45 minutes for tonight. So do get your questions for the Q&A in early. You can do that either tagging me in the live chat with @ModernDayDebate, or you can use the super chat that will push your question to the top of the list. We don't want insults toward the guests. We want sincere questions. Thank you very much. Floor is all yours, Destiny and Kim.
Yeah, I guess the first thing is, do we agree that Donald Trump thought that Vice President Pence could choose him as the winner of the last election?
I don't know what Donald Trump thought when it came to that. I think that there are some legalities with how our country runs that do allow for certain procedures. A lot of them are really wonky and they get into the weeds. So there is maybe a possibility that he thought something could happen, but...
Are you aware that Trump and Eastman wanted Pence to break the law in Congress, the Electoral Count Act? They wanted him to break that law to choose Donald Trump to remain president.
Once again, I'm not sure if that was breaking the law or if that was using an obscure procedural rule that would allow for something along those lines. That has been debated by experts. I am not an expert on that, but experts do debate that.
To be clear, experts don't debate it. Are you aware that Eastman himself said on
how
first
do you know,
pass...
Why do you say that experts don't debate that when they do debate that?
Because none. Find them and bring them to me and I will destroy all of them.
You don't
no
think that
real
there are
expert,
any...
No, there are none.
That there are any experts that debate whether or not there are some procedural rules that would allow for certain things to happen during those procedures. You don't think that there's any expert out there that was arguing that? Because I heard numerous experts saying that there was this, you know, obscure rule that would allow something like that to happen.
Maybe from other countries, but not from the United States. No, there were no serious experts arguing this. That's why Eastman himself said that if it went to the Supreme Court, he said they'd probably lose 7-2. And then he said they'd probably lose 9-0.
7-2. So two of the Supreme Court justices. Do you not think that they know the laws of this country?
Eastman was asked on First Pass, do you think that they would win in the Supreme Court? And he said, we would probably lose 7-2. And then he admitted they would lose 9-0.
But actually, we don't know because it never went to the Supreme Court. But had it, maybe it would lose 7-2. I'm not saying it would have won. But the fact that there maybe would have been two or three justices that would have ruled in favor show that there is an obscure rule that potentially could have been used that Trump thought that would be possible.
If you're the progenitor, if you're the originator of the idea, and even you think that you would lose in the Supreme Court, but maybe two people will side with you, that doesn't seem like an idea that's hotly contested by experts.
experts clearly, if two of them would agree to it, then maybe you wouldn't win, but it still doesn't mean that the rule isn't worth challenging. There's plenty of cases that lose in the Supreme Court. It doesn't make them not worth challenging.
Do you think it would be in line with American democracy for the president to tell the vice president to ignore the will of the voters and choose who the next president is going to be?
I think that if the will of the voters was ignored by the electoral process and if the vote was rigged, then yes, absolutely. It would be the responsibility of the president of the United States to actually put that forward to protect democracy in this country. Depends on how you look at it. If it were Donald Trump who subverted the election and Kamala Harris actually wins and you believe in your mind or you know for sure that she actually won, wouldn't you want them to challenge that? Wouldn't you want them to try to do whatever they could to preserve democracy? The only reason you're against it is because of the person. And you've got to look deeper than that. It's got to be about the actual process, not the person. Donald Trump might not be your guy or my guy, but nonetheless, the process needs to be protected.
Yes, I agree with that. You already said that you don't know the process. So I don't know why you're appealing to the process. Donald Trump did try to challenge the election with 64 different court cases. He won one of them in an inconsequential Pennsylvania case that didn't really impact much of the vote at all. He lost the other 63. He was shot down in the Supreme Court a number of times. And he was shot down when he tried to present false evidence to state legislatures a number of times. Everywhere that he tried the process, he lost. And that ended up with him begging Pence to basically just choose him as the winner of the election. At what point can we not say this is probably anti-democratic?
How is that anti-democratic? He went through the process. If you challenge things in court and you lose in court, that's still using the process. Just because you lost doesn't mean that you're doing anything illegal. You're using the process.
It was illegal to break the ECA. He lost in the courts. That's why he told Pence, I need you to break the law and choose me to be president. That was the process. He went through the courts and he lost. He didn't like the result. And then he asked Pence to choose him to be the winner of the election. This is anti-democratic.
I believe that that is part of the, if that's part of the process, that's part of the process.
Was it part of the process when they had people forge in seven different states that they were the electors and that they wanted to vote for Trump?
Again, there are a lot of rules with the process. In fact, when the Democrats were upset that Donald Trump had won in 2016, they pursued similar tactics. They
Can
wanted
you name
to
a
actually
single
have...
state where they had a false slate of electors made without the approval of the state legislature?
I believe Colorado actually in 2016 did put forward some alternate electors or even said that they wanted to have a compromise candidate send electors to do the election and instead put Mitt Romney in as a compromise candidate. I remember this very clearly.
Hypothesizing on what a state legislature said that they want to do to maybe they did is far different than Trump's campaign.
There was an actual push.
There was a push for it. That's great that some people might have pushed for it. Donald Trump and his underlings falsified seven different slates of electors for Pence to choose on January 6th. This is anti-democratic. What could be less democratic than trying to change the outcome of the election of a state because you don't like the result?
Do you believe that the election results in Venezuela were accurate?
I'm not Venezuelan. I don't care about the results in Venezuela, but we had ways to challenge the results in the United States. Breaking the law and having the vice president choose you to be the president again, surely you can see the conflict of interest there, right? The guy that is president right now is saying that the election was rigged when he's running for election again. I mean, why would we trust this person who lost in every other forum?
In 2016, Democrats believed that the elections were rigged.
What's the difference, though? In 2016, Hillary conceded that night. Donald Trump said stop the count and tried to win the election early.
Did Hillary really concede? She conceded and then continued to undermine behind the scenes Donald Trump's presidency, continued to delegitimize it, continued to go after him numerous times over and over after 2016. I don't think
people however you want. What could be less democratic than Donald Trump telling Pence, I want you to make me the president again. I'm not happy with these court results. I'm not happy with what's going on. I need you to choose me again to be president.
I don't think that's actually a clear characterization of what really happened.
It is absolutely what happened.
Well, from your perspective.
No, from the perspective of every single person involved. That's why Eastman, after it failed, was emailing Giuliani saying hey, you remember that pardon list? I think I do need to be stuck on that. I think I'm going to need some pardons preemptively just in case. This is why Giuliani and Sidney Powell are being sued. It's why they've admitted that they lied about the voter fraud. It's why a lot of them are being disbarred now. Yes, this all happened. It's very public record, very open testimonies under oath. Yes, all of this happened. So do you agree that Donald Trump telling the vice president, can you make me president again? That's the least democratic thing you could ever do in a democracy.
I think that if you think that the election was rigged, I think that it is your responsibility to protect democracy.
So you think that Donald Trump should have tried to steal the election if he thinks that
forgive me. I just want to I want to give you a chance to each of you to get any last thoughts on this. But then I want to redirect us back to Kamala Harris per se.
Okay.
Okay, yeah. I just think when we talk about democracies, the Democratic Party or the Republican Party could literally right now say, oh, here's my candidate. We're going to put this guy forward. And then you guys can vote for them or not in the general election. Both parties have a right to do that. They're private parties. They can do whatever they want, basically. The idea that Kamala Harris, who was the vice president, who was on the ticket, that delegates that switch from Biden to Kamala Harris is somehow anti-democratic. You don't have to vote for them in the general if you don't want to. Nobody's forcing you to do that. But somehow Donald Trump telling the vice president, hey, I need you to just pick me as the president. I need you to pick me and ignore, you know, the will of the actual voters of the American population and just pick me to be the president again because I'm not happy with the results of the last election. That is the least democratic thing you could ever do in a democracy.
I think it was to delay in order to allow for more counting. I don't think it was just install me as president again and anoint me as president. It instead was a tactic to delay in order for the challenges to go through the courts.
The challenges had gone through and they had all lost. All 64 cases were resolved by then. They had nothing live. Everything was dead. It was completely gone. That's why they wanted him to just choose him to be president again during the January 6th counting ceremony. Yeah.
Forgive me, Kim. I'm sure you've got a round in the chamber ready to fire, but I do want to just redirect us just back to Kamala Harris per se.
Okay, so regarding Kamala Harris, it is an undemocratic process to anoint the next person. Even if the Democratic Party is allowed to do this because they are a private company, I understand that the courts have ruled in that way. Shouldn't that bother you? If you are somebody who actually wants to protect democracy, it doesn't matter if these are private companies, if these are private corporations. They're supposed to be championing and standing for democracy. And in fact, that is something that the Democratic Party claims that they are holding the torch for, is democracy. Yet what they do is they completely undermine the voters. Kamala Harris has the lowest rating ever of any vice president in the history of this country. And yet they anointed her as vice president without even an open primary. They didn't have an open primary, nor did they have an open convention that would have allowed at least the electors to vote for other people. They didn't even allow that. They just said, Kamala Harris is our person. This is a person you're going to have to vote for. And they didn't give you a choice. That is completely against democracy.
I have a choice. I can vote for whoever I want in the general election. So you're completely wrong there. The goal of the party is to put forth a candidate that is the most likely to win the election. I think that the Democratic Party choosing the person who is on the ticket that won more votes in any presidential election in all of history is probably better than trying to have an open primary and having us devolve into a crazy, you know, shit show for a month trying to figure out who the next candidate is going to be. I think the DNC choosing Kamala Harris probably gives them the best chance to win in the general. And I'll be voting for Kamala Harris because she was part of the ticket that all the other Democrats voted for on the last election. If you're not happy with that or if you don't like that, that's fine. But it's not anti-democratic because nobody is forcing you to vote that ticket. If you want, vote for somebody else or just don't vote at all or have a protest vote or whatever. And the DNC would probably never do that again. The idea that it was anti-democratic for the DNC to pick the path that they wanted to put forth who they felt was the best candidate, which traditionally they do with the delegate process or an open primary. But this time, because of extenuating circumstances, they just went with the vice president who was already on the ticket. I think to call that anti-democratic is silly. There's nothing anti-democratic about that. Nobody's forcing you to vote for Kamala in the general election.
Well, how else are you going to vote? Who would you vote for then? Who are your options?
I could not vote. I could vote for Trump. I could vote for Jill Stein or the Libertarian candidate. You vote for whoever you want to vote for. It's the United States of America.
So you don't think that the party that is saying we are the party for democracy and then completely subverting that democracy and not even listening to the will of the Democratic voters and instead just giving them, force feeding them a candidate, you think that that is fine? That's democracy.
Standing for democracy is not what you do inside of a company. Democracy is not what happens in the McDonald's manager's office. Democracy is what we do to protect the institutions of the United States of America while we're expressing our will through the structures of our government. The Democratic Party, as a private party, their goal is to put up the candidate that they think can win best. When the Democratic Party talks about protecting democracy, they're not talking about the internal primary process or how they, put delegates to different candidates. They're talking about defending democracy in the United States of America as part of the U.S. government. So their goal should be to put up the strongest candidate. There aren't a ton of people in the Democratic Party that hate Kamala Harris and are mad that they put her up. There are some extreme people, or there are some outsiders that are trying to say that it should be different. But Kamala was part of the most winning ticket in all of presidential history. If anything, I think I'd be more upset if I was a Republican and I saw that Donald Trump didn't even debate the other Republican candidates because he was so scared of now, as we've seen, being exposed as a delusional, insane old man that can't even, you know, hold his composure on stage. Donald Trump didn't have a single debate with Haley or with DeSantis. And you're going to say that process was somehow more democratic? Like, no, they're private parties. But the Republican Party can choose their nominee however they want as well. I don't care. It's
private parties. they decided to actually listen to voters. That's how they did it. They decided to let people vote and decide. Nikki Haley put up a fierce campaign. So did Ron DeSantis. So did many others. And ultimately, the voters decided that they didn't want, they didn't care to hear a debate between Donald Trump or Ron DeSantis or Donald Trump and Nikki Haley. The voters decided, not the top-down elites sitting in a back room deciding who was going to be their best candidate. They didn't really want Donald Trump. There was a lot of internal chatter inside of the Republican Party not really wanting Donald Trump, but ultimately they did allow the voters to decide. So you're saying that in order to protect democracy, it is totally fine to not allow the democratic process with the people in order to protect democracy. So then what in your mind is democracy?
It's not how private parties put forth their candidate.
What's democracy?
Democracy is a very broad idea that expresses different forms of government that usually involve some form of the population voting.
And what would they vote on?
We could vote on a presidential candidate. We could vote on legislators and lawmakers. We could vote on city council people. We could do direct referendums to vote for policies.
So is it a democracy if, let's say, both parties just decide that they're going to nominate the same exact candidate and we're all going to have one choice and they have the freedom to do that because they're both corporate private entities? So let's say they decide that they're both going to put forward their person and that's who we get to choose and there's nobody else on the ticket. Is it democracy just because we do get to go through the process of casting the vote for the one person that's available to us?
Other people could run for president. Nobody's forcing you to vote for that candidate. You could do write-ins. You could vote for another person. You don't have to vote for who the two major parties nominate.
Well,
you understand that how private companies do things it has nothing to do with democracy, right? Like the DNC could say, we're going to do a survey across the United States of America, and we're going to make the tallest person in America our candidate. That would have no impact on our democracy. I imagine a lot of people would be upset. I probably just wouldn't vote for the Democratic ticket, and I'm sure another party would arise. If we believe in free market capitalism and freedom and all that, I'm sure another party would come up and they would offer a better candidate. That has no impact on our democracy. Nobody's forcing me to put this person in government. This is just the candidate they're putting up. And again, I don't think we disagree. Kamala Harris was part of the ticket that got more votes than any other presidential ticket in the entire history of the United States. So why would I want them to do an open primary with a month to go and then have the entire party descend into chaos? Would that be more democratic to allow a whole bunch of people to come in and a whole bunch of crazy stuff to happen? Would we be more unified in 1 month afterwards? No, I think the DNC made the correct choice. The majority of the Democratic voters seem to think that they made the right choice. The fact that the Republican Party is currently in free fall, I think means that most people think the Democratic Party made the right choice. So yeah, I think it was a good choice. And if you don't like it, just don't vote for him. There's no impact on our democracy.
And this is the most bizarre argument. I'll let you have that one because okay. Ultimately, I think you just argued against yourself. This is not, you've just described anti-democratic processes and trying to claim that it's democracy. I don't even know.
Is it anti-democratic when a supervisor tells an employee that they need to clock out because they're going to get overtime? Is that anti-democratic?
Companies are not democracies.
They can.
You have the right to leave your job.
I agree with you. I agree with what you just said. Companies are not democracies. Okay. The RNC and the DNC are private companies. That's all they are. And I agree with you. They're not democracies.
They're private companies that should not be running as private companies, especially when one of them in particular champions itself as the torch bearer for democracy.
So what, we should pass laws in Congress that make the parties part of our constitution, or we imbue them in law somehow? Like, what does that even mean?
I think that there should be some laws that say that these political parties, if they are going to be political parties putting forth political candidates, that they do have to operate on the basis of democracy, that they should not be operating on the basis of being a private company, that even if they are private corporations, they are still participating in a certain marketplace, the marketplace of democracy, and they need to follow democratic processes in order to participate in that marketplace. Otherwise, start a different company, be a different type of corporation, sell a product, do something.
If you want to do that, that's fine. But like, we would have to change the entire process. Like, primaries aren't even really. Yes, absolutely. What do you think that a primary is even that democratic? How many people vote in the primaries? What, like 10 or 11 million people? What's democratic about people campaigning for Iowa and New Hampshire because they just arbitrarily happen to be the first two states, you know, that are casting the votes? What's democratic about a caucus, right? A bunch of people standing around and raising their hand and doing, you know, A's and A's. Like, come on. Or A's and A's. Like, no. The idea that the primary process is some holy vanguard of democracy is silly. When historically, over 100 years ago, I don't think parties had primaries for candidates. They literally just put a candidate forward. And we were closer in time then to our founding fathers than we are now. So this idea that we're less democratic because of how the primary, these are private companies. They can put forth candidates however they want. If you don't like it, don't vote for it.
So, okay. I mean, it's if you're going to participate in a democracy, this is kind of like the argument about when certain companies don't want to give services to certain groups of people. They don't like gays, for example, so they don't want to sell services to gays. What the Supreme Court decides is if you're going to have an open business to the public, you have to serve the public. That is, you can't just decide just because you're a private company that you're going to do things your way. There are certain rules to the game. There's got to be rules to the Democratic game. If you're going to participate and make a corporation that's going to be under, that's going to be participating in the marketplace of democracy, then you need to be democratic in the way that you operate. You can close your primaries to only those who are registered voters, but you should be, but typically what they're supposed to be doing and what we think they're supposed to do, but of course, the legalities are a little bit different, is they are supposed to have primaries in each state or caucuses, and people are allowed, if they're especially registered for those parties, to vote in those primaries. Of course, the state doesn't really have to do that. They can, I mean, the parties don't really have to do that. They can, as you mentioned, they are private companies. But just because they can get away with these types of things does not mean that we should allow it or condone it in any way or say, this is fine, we're okay with it. We should never be okay with a lack of democracy.
When you say we should never be okay with it, so then real quick, for the 150 years or whatever that this country didn't have primaries then, were we not a democracy then? We just became a democracy like a few decades ago or whatever? Like this argument is nonsense. Primaries have nothing to do with whether or not you are a democracy. How you serve the public has nothing to do with whether or not a company is a democracy. This argument is disconnected at every single level. A party can put forward the candidate however they want. Yeah.
On this particular topic, I want to give Kim the last word. And then I do want to examine someone in the chat said, hey, we really want to hear what you guys both think on Kamala and the economy particularly. Go ahead, Kim.
Okay. I don't know what democracy is then, if democracy doesn't involve grassroots people voting for what they want to vote for, getting the candidates in that they want to represent them, getting the policies in that they want to represent them. That to me is democracy. And I think that's the definition to most people. So to say that, well, it doesn't really matter. The democracy is you have the right to vote. You could just vote for, you could write somebody in who you know will never, ever win. And they've just anointed a person is completely antithetical to democracy.
I want to jump into this. Kamala, would Harris be a benefit for the economy? Would this be maybe the economy would just be sustained? In other words, maintained at where it is, or would it become worse? What do you guys think?
I think that it's hard to predict what a Trump economy would look like because Trump has given basically no policy positions whatsoever. Even though Kamala is a bit to the left of me, I trust her on the economy more because I think that Democrats tend to hold their own accountable. I think that Democrats tend to put a little bit more restraint if a candidate suggests something crazy. But Republicans are completely and totally unable to hold Trump accountable because the entire party is obsessed with Donald Trump. So if Donald Trump says something insane, like he wants to put 10 or 20% tariffs on every import in the world, the entire Republican Party is absolutely silent on it because nobody can say anything to counteract anything he says because he knows that Donald Trump is going to try to bully them out of office and turn them into a rhino and destroy their career. So I definitely trust the Democrats more on economic policy right now because Donald Trump is insane. I don't even know if he knows what a tariff is. And I haven't heard anything very compelling from Donald Trump when it comes to economic policy.
I think we just look at where we are right now as an economy. We're just definitely worse off. We have much higher inflation. Under Biden, it has reached a peak of 9%. Under Donald Trump, I believe that the average inflation was about 1.8. So it's a lot lower. We look at unemployment and jobs. The COVID pandemic, we can't really count that in. It's unfair to say how many jobs were lost during the pandemic and then how many jobs were regained. But now we've leveled out. We can look at where we're at today in 2024 or even in 2023 comparatively to under Donald Trump in 2018 and 2019. And I think there's no doubt that we are worse off economically by all measurements today than we were in 2018 or 2019.
Yeah, there's this unfortunate reality that every time a Democrat comes in office, we basically have to clean up the insane disaster left to us by the last Republican president. When it was Obama, it was having to clean up the disaster of the 2008 financial crisis. And when it was Biden, it was trying to clean up the disastrous response that Trump had to COVID. So is the economy worse off now than it was in like 2018? I mean, it depends on which indicators or which metrics you're looking at. There are definitely some things that are harder. Inflation was definitely an issue relating to COVID. But one thing that I noticed was curiously absent from Kim's answer here was, what is Trump going to do about it? There were no policy positions given. There were just statements made about the state of the economy. Donald Trump did massive deficit spending that, of course, would contribute to the inflation that we felt a few years later. Donald Trump slashed taxes. He cut government revenue, and he didn't actually decrease any of the government spending. He ran the highest budget deficits for no reason of any president in all of history. At least Biden can say, well, I was dealing with COVID. I had to do something. Trump just ran massive deficits because he wanted to, because it was the popular thing to do. When the Fed talked about raising rates, he tried to bully them on Twitter. So yeah, of course, anything to go to government that's willing to just spend like crazy and reduce the amount of money they take in, of course, the economy is going to be booming. But I mean, yeah, if you print a ton of money and you just give it to people for no reason, of course, the economy is going to be booming. What are the policies that Donald Trump is suggesting now that would help Americans going forward? And what do we think about this tariff idea? He keeps saying 10% tariffs, 20% tariffs on everything. How is that just not going to boost inflation even more?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a fan of the tariff idea. I don't agree with Donald Trump on that. But going back to Harris and Harris's policies and whether or not she has anything that's going to be boosting the economy. I mean, to say that the Democrats are here now cleaning up Republicans' mess, it's an odd way to clean it up. With record inflation, and we've got a record now gig economy, so people are not able to get full-time jobs with benefits. They're instead having to hustle, having 2-3 jobs. This is an odd way to clean up the mess. So if this is their idea of cleaning it up, I think most Americans agree that they would like to see some change. So, maybe Trump, it's unclear exactly what maybe he would do to now clean up Democrats' mess. But I think that just the option for change and potentially the ability to lower inflation, to better the economy, to better our lives, people, I think, are willing to take that risk if the alternative is more of the same.
Yeah. All I heard was there was one Trump policy I've heard of called tariffs, and I don't like that. And I don't know what else he would do, but hopefully it would be better.
I'm saying is that what exactly did Biden and Harris do that cleaned
Biden and
up
Harris
the Republicans'
managed,
mess?
I mean, they managed COVID decently well. Yeah, there was inflation, but there was less inflation in the United States compared to, you know, the OECD, compared to the G7, compared to like every other Western country in the world. We're doing better than basically everybody else right now. Yeah, there was inflation. There was inflation worldwide. COVID was a huge, like, worldwide stimulus given to every single country on the planet. So, of course, there's definitely going to be inflation felt. And Donald Trump didn't do anything to help inflation. Why would I think Donald Trump could help inflation when he had a booming economy and he didn't manage to cut the deficit? Donald Trump couldn't manage the budget when the economy was exploding. Why would I think he could manage the budget when the economy is having trouble? And now you've got the Fed actually announcing that they're going to be cutting rates because inflation has come under control. So it seems like the administration is heading in the right direction. Why would I trust Donald Trump, whose only economic policy he's put forth would increase inflation, which are tariffs? Why would I trust him to do anything good? Can you articulate like a single policy that you think Trump would do that would be good for the average American that would actually help the economy?
Well, I could tell you what he wouldn't have done that Democrats did do that actually crushed our economy, that actually crushed the economies around the world during COVID in particular, and that was government shutdowns. That was Democrats with their Democratic governors, and they were taking directives from top down, closing the economy. Of course, when you close the economy, you're going to end up with a lot of ramifications that are going to be very damaging to an economy. And that is not something that any Republican or Donald Trump advocated for. So I could tell you that, yes, the world economy, everything was very bad. Under Biden, things have been bad with COVID. I don't know exactly what you think they did to clean up COVID or to help during that crisis, when actually all of the decisions, in particular lockdowns, have led to massive disaster.
Who do you think was the president during the majority of the lockdowns?
Who do you think actually directed the lockdowns?
Okay, the answer was Donald Trump. The answer was Donald Trump. So Donald Trump was the president during the majority of lockdowns, number one. Number two, when you say, what did the Democrats do? I mean, we could look at a ton of different things. They had the child tax credit, something that Kamala Harris wants to bring back. The child tax credit slashed childhood poverty by like, what, 50%, 54%? It was a huge boost to working families. What else did they do? Biden passed legislation to make meaningful change and meaningful investments in our ability to manufacture microprocessors with the CHIPS Act, the ability to reinvest in our infrastructure with the infrastructure bill, a bill that Donald Trump wanted to get passed, but he couldn't the 4 years that was here. He actually managed to pass a bill that tried to offset the spending of the bill with new tax receipts, with the IRA, the Inflation Reduction Act. I mean, what didn't they do? I mean, the Democrats tried their best, and I think we've seen the results of that. The United States is crushing the rest of the world due to actual legislation that I can articulate and actual policies that I can articulate. Donald Trump just rode off of an economy that was already booming under the last few years of Obama. We've been posting all-time highs and the S&P 500 and the Dow Jones for like since I think 20, there's like 2013. And all Trump did was came in and he spent more, and then bullied the Fed when they talked about raising rates because they were getting worried about inflation. And then here we are. Again, you can't articulate a single policy or a single thing that Donald Trump would do. You're mad at shutdowns that happened under Donald Trump.
I'm not arguing for Donald Trump. We're arguing against Kamala Harris, very specifically. I am not for Donald Trump. I'm not voting for Donald Trump. Let me just make that extremely clear. So I am not arguing on behalf of Donald Trump. I'm arguing against Kamala Harris. What we know is that Democrats have done a very piss poor job of actually managing the economy. We are worse
compared to
off today by every single measurement.
But we're better than every other country. We came out of COVID.
Except China.
We came out of COVID better off than every other first world country.
How are we better off? We have now given away boatloads of cash to Ukraine, to Israel. We're giving away our money.
That's a drop in the bucket compared to our budget yearly. Okay. Number one. Number two, how are we better off? We're crushing them on our job market and our economy. We're crushing them when it comes to inflation. The USD is probably too strong right now for our exports market. What do you mean? How are we? We're crushing them in every way. You graduate with a computer science degree in the United Kingdom, and the first thing you're trying to do is find a job in the United States. You're trying to work for Amazon. You don't want to get paid 39,000 quid a year working as a programmer in the United Kingdom. What do you mean? How are we doing compared to the rest of the world? How are we beating them? We're beating them in like every single conceivable way, except for domestically, we're falling apart because of conservatives' refusal to accept reality. I think this conversation is a good example of that. The Harris policies, if they continue what Biden was doing, I think they put us on a good track. And it'd be cool to see what, you know, Democrats can do when they're not just trying to recover from the disasters left to us by the last Republican administration.
So you're arguing that you really believe that the average American is better off today than they were under Donald Trump?
I don't know if they're better off today than they were under Donald Trump, but that's because we had COVID. The question isn't whether or not we're better off today than we were 4 years ago, because we can't go back in time. Time only moves in one direction. The question is would we have been better off with 4 more years of Trump? Probably not. I don't think so. There's zero indication that that's the case. And then the question would be, in the next 4 years, are we going to be better off with Trump or with Harris? And I see no reason. Donald Trump couldn't pass any big bills or any legislation, even stuff he said he wanted to get done. He couldn't even repeal the ACA so he can control any of his spending. All he did was spend. Donald Trump's just... And the only major policy platform he's talking about are tariffs on everything. So why would I think Donald Trump would be good? The stock market is posting all-time highs, or unemployment is still low. The Fed wants to cut rates. Every economic indicator is looking positive. I don't even know what to say. What could Donald Trump possibly do? What's wrong with what Harris wants to do?
What's wrong with what Harris wants to do is just continue where we're at right now, which a lot of Americans don't want to be in, which is high inflation.
Inflation has come down. The Fed wants to cut rates. Why would the Fed be talking about cutting rates if inflation was still too high?
Yeah, it's a good question why they want to cut rates just weeks before an election. It's really a good question why they would suddenly want to do that, a record cut to the rates.
The implication that the Federal Reserve is beholden to the Democratic Party? It's an independent operation of banks. What do you mean?
I think they're beholden to the establishment. Well, they're definitely beholden to the establishment. They're part of the establishment. And Harris is certainly the establishment candidate compared to Donald Trump. So I think they would have a reason for wanting to maintain an establishment candidate in the White House. But when it comes to Kamala Harris,
to be clear, what you are just blindly and conspiratorially suggesting, you know, that's what Donald Trump actually tried to do, right? Your implication is that somehow the Fed is making political decisions. You know that Donald Trump was trying to force them to make political decisions, right? That when Donald Trump took to Twitter and took to the bully pulpit as the president, he was attacking the Fed for talking about raising rates. He was attacking the Fed for that. That's what Donald Trump tried to do. What you're asserting with zero evidence that Biden and Kamala, what do you not believe the inflation rates that are being posted? Do you think that's all a lie? So the Federal Reserve is just acting on nothing and nobody in our economy can see that? Or,
well, don't you think that it's interesting then, if you really believe, and maybe you're right, that the Fed completely operates completely independently from any political influence whatsoever, the fact that they feel like they need to do a rate cut this big, what does that tell you?
What do you mean
that
a rate cut
that
this
things
big?
Are not, this is a very large rate cut.
No,
this
it's
is
not.
This is a large rate cut. They don't do just half a point out of nowhere. They usually do a quarter of a point, not a half a point. That's actually quite a large rate cut. For them to be doing that right now shows that they believe the economy is in dire straits under Joe Biden and Kamala Harris, that they have to take drastic measures in order to correct it.
No.
Why are they doing it then?
What are the two things that the Federal Reserve try to manage?
Why don't you tell me?
Okay. So you don't know. Okay. The Federal Reserve tries to balance unemployment and they try to balance inflation. Okay. These are the two indicators that the Federal Reserve looks at to determine how they should set rates. If inflation is getting really, really, really low, then the Federal Reserve is going to cut rates because we should have some amount of inflation to keep the economy healthy and moving. That's how the Federal Reserve makes decisions. And then it also looks at unemployment. If unemployment is getting, too high, then they might cut rates as well. It just depends. Like, these are the two things, but balancing out unemployment and inflation are the two, that's the mission statement of the Federal Reserve. How could you accuse, the Federal Reserve of acting in a politically partisan way? If you don't even know what the mission of the Federal Reserve is. I'm dropping that accusation.
I'm asking you, why did they do the rate cut?
Because they feel like inflation has come down significantly.
So they want to boost it back up?
Yes.
You think that's exactly why they did? So they did a rate cut because they want inflation.
What do you think the goal inflation percentage is? You have no idea. You realize you have no idea. You're laughing because you think inflation should be at 0%. Ideal inflation is 2%. What do you think unemployment 2%. Should be? 0%? Yes, correct. 2% is the target. That's correct. And if they feel like we're undershooting that target, then they try to preemptively cut rates or raise rates because it takes a little bit for the Federal Reserve policy, for the federal funds rate, to actually impact with the trading of all the securities and everything else later on. So yes, that's why they're doing it. We can all look at the inflation rate. We can all look at the unemployment. These numbers are all posted publicly and everybody looks at them. So
the economy is so great. So you're just saying the economy is great. You want to keep it going the way that it is.
I didn't say
you
don't think economy, that there are any they don't look at the economy. They look at inflation and they look at unemployment,
which are indicators of the economy and how healthy the economy is.
They could be. They might not be. It just depends. They are two indicators, but the goal of the Federal Reserve is not to make the economy good or make the economy bad. The two indicators that they look at are inflation and unemployment. Those are the two things that they're, yeah.
But you're arguing that you think that the economy under Kamala Harris and Joe Biden right now is great and that we should just continue on and that Americans are going to be fine.
I'll give you a chance to respond, Stephen, but then I do want to jump into it.
Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today. If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that, instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy.
New topic, because we're going to go into Q&A about 15 minutes or so.
Sure. Yes, I think obviously I think I've articulated policy, I've articulated economic positions, I've articulated how the economy has rebounded under COVID. I've articulated that the United States is ahead of the rest of the OECD. Every indicator points to the fact that this administration did a phenomenal job coming out of COVID for sure. And the major complaint that you had, the two major complaints I would guess would be like massive deficit spending, and then the one that you articulated, which was lockdowns, all happened under Donald Trump. So yeah, I do think that the Harris administration will be superior to whatever the Republicans put up.
I want to give Stephen the last word this time, and then I want to go into the next topic, which is Kamala on the border. Who would be better for the border, Kamala or an alternative? What do you guys think?
Do you want to go first again? Or
you're arguing for Harris, right?
Yeah, Kamala would be better on the border because we've already seen Biden and the Democrats try to put up a border bill that would address a lot of the border problems. This bill was a Republican-authored bill. It was by Lankford in the Senate. They tried to put it up, and Donald Trump wanted the Republicans to vote it down because he wanted to keep the border open in order to run an election issue. So the idea that the Republicans would try to destroy the border for politically advantageous reasons is the only thing that I need to know to say that I would never trust these guys with any type of security issue, because clearly them winning political battles is more important than them actually securing the border, which we might see coming up soon with the budget. Yeah.
They've had 4 years. So even if there is some interference that happens closer to an election, they've had 4 years to do something about the border. But instead, their policies have led to a massive wave of people coming through the border. And they have laughed it off. They have shrugged off border issues since Donald Trump was elected in 2016. They claimed it was a conspiracy theory. They chose to do nothing about it. And now it has gotten so bad that they've realized that their own rhetoric, their own policies have led to a severe crisis that even they can no longer ignore. And they're now having to finally do something about it. But part of the reason why we have this border crisis is because Democrats over the last 8 years refused to do anything about it until now. It's just so big of an issue that even Democratic governors and mayors are screaming, please help. This has gone wrong and we really have to do something about it. They let the problem get so bad because they were trying to score political points all of these years that we're now where we're at to where they have to actually do something about it. So I think just on the merits, Kamala Harris and Joe Biden, but Harris specifically going forward as president, the fact that she ignored these issues for so long, claiming that it was just some sort of a Trump talking point or a MAGA talking point to let it get to this bad, just goes to show that this is not a serious person who's really truly looking to solve America's problems. This is somebody who's actually looking to score political points, the very thing that you're actually accusing them, the Republicans, of doing.
I mean... We had 4 years of Donald Trump. Where is our immigration bill? Where is our border bill? Where is the wall? Trump did nothing. He had both houses of Congress, and Trump did absolutely nothing about the border. It's funny because Trump says, I ran on immigration because we had problems with the wall. That's not true. Even on Trump's own little stupid chart that he posts, Obama was posting better immigration numbers than he was. So Obama was doing better than Trump on immigration. Trump wants to say it's not fair to count the last year or two, of my administration because COVID messed everything up, but he sure does want to take credit for the lowered immigration numbers under COVID. And then you saw them start to spike back up, even though he lied on his chart for when, he was actually out of office. They were spiking up almost to all-time highs right before he left office. So clearly Donald Trump wasn't capable of managing anything at the border. And when Democrats did want to pass something to manage the issue at the border, the Republicans blocked it. It was a good bill. It would have helped a lot with the asylum process. It would have provided more funding for border agents. It would have provided more funding for asylum judges to process people that were here for asylum claims. Like, everything about that bill was good, and the Republicans blocked it. So it's like a policy thing. Like, what is Donald Trump going to do about the border? And why would I think that Donald Trump could do whatever he says he's going to do when he can't articulate any plans whatsoever? And he couldn't do it in the 4 years that he was president. Where is my immigration bill? Where's my border bill? Where's my wall from my 4 years of Donald Trump?
Well, Democrats blocked all of that because they weren't taking it seriously.
The Republicans had the House and the Senate.
They didn't have enough of a majority, and they need more. They needed some bipartisan support. Democrats, instead of even taking this situation seriously, laughed at it, scoffed at it, mocked it, claimed it was some sort of political talking point when it was an actual real problem. And now it's gotten so bad that Democrats now want to finally do something about it, something that Republicans have been wanting to do for the last 8 years. And Democrats want to pass a bill and then take credit for it. I don't blame the Republicans for wanting to block that to score political points at this juncture when they know that this is something Democrats have been blocking for the last 8 years. Now, finally, Democrats are on board. Now, finally, Democrats see that there's an actual real problem. But they only want to do that now that Democratic governors and mayors have been screaming, saying, we can't handle this. There's a massive influx. And you guys have been ignoring it and treating it like it's some sort of a racist policy to secure the southern border. So, you know, the reason why Donald Trump was unable to get anything through was because Democrats continue to use it as a talking point, as a campaign point, making it about racism rather than a real problem. And here we are today. I don't trust Democrats to fix something when they have been the ones blocking it for the last 8 years.
Okay. Well, I mean, you just gave me every reason in the world never to vote for Trump on this issue, because you just admitted that Donald Trump can't do it without a supermajority, I guess, in the House and the Senate, which he will never have. So I automatically know that no matter what, Donald Trump will never be able to get anything passed. And so then I have to look at Harris and I have to look at Biden. And when Biden and Harris were supporting this bill, they actually did have support in the House and the Senate. The only reason that it wasn't passed is because Donald Trump, the cancer rotting our country, came in from the outside and said, don't pass this bill. I need to be able to talk about Haitians eating dogs and whatever other nonsense I want to make up in order to actually be able to win the next election. So it seems like there was a bill under the Democrats that was ready to pass with support from the legislature. It just didn't because of Donald Trump. And under Donald Trump, there were no bills because Donald Trump can't make deals with anybody. And the fact that he needs a supermajority in both halves of Congress to pass anything is a bigger indictment against his leadership than probably anything I could have said on my own.
Well, I think that you just made the argument, the same exact argument, but against the Democrats, because if Democrats, a handful of Democrats, the need for a supermajority is what blocked Republicans. How pathetic is it that one man was able to stop Democrats?
An opportunity.
It wasn't one. It was one man telling all the lawmakers not to vote for the. Yeah,
it's got a lot of power there. I guess he's sitting there wielding his power against the Democrats. I can't get anything done because of Donald Trump.
True. That's, cults are very powerful. Their leaders, you know, they wield a lot of power. That is how dictators work. Yes.
This might be a good opportunity. One last topic, Harris on crime. What are your thoughts?
For crime stuff, it's kind of hard on the federal level because I feel like crime is a thing that's typically dealt with at the city and state level. I really don't know how much influence anybody can have on the federal level when it comes to enforcing things relating to crime. I do know that, you know, if I can look at like direct actions that people take, like the mobilization of things like the National Guard, I know that Donald Trump was in charge of the National Guard on January 6th and he decided not to deploy them for political reasons. So I don't know why I would trust that guy who will allow some crime to happen as long as it's advantageous to him. I don't know how I'd ever trust that guy in managing anything related to crime. I also don't think I trust Trump on anything that he says for crime, because I know that, for instance, when Walz was dealing with BLM stuff in his state, Donald Trump had a lot of nice things to say about him. But as soon as he was running for president again and Walz was made the VP pick, all of a sudden Donald Trump hated everything that he did. So I don't know if I could trust anything on Trump when it comes to crime. And again, I would challenge, I'd love to hear a single position articulated that Donald Trump has talked about that would help anything related to crime in the United States. But again, I don't know what the president, the federal like president, can do in regards to crime.
I think that when we look back at just even Kamala Harris's record on crime as a prosecutor, she has a mixed record. Democrats in general have been very lax on crime. They have advocated for lax criminal policies. There was a lot of defund the police chatter. There was a lot of, bail out the people that committed crime during the Black Lives Matter protests and funds that were created. Democratic policies across various different states have allowed for criminal activity. I live in the state of California. They allow now a certain amount of criminal activity to go completely overlooked. I think I agree that I'm not sure what the president can really do. I mean, the president doesn't really even have much on, like, when it comes to tax policies, for example, that has to be done through Congress, or even the border policies have to be passed by Congress. There's very little a president themselves can actually do without an act of Congress. But when it comes to crime, these are more about, I think, the policies of the platform of the party. And Democrats as a party have run on, we want to allow more criminal activity, essentially, or certain things are not really crimes when they really are. So I think the entire messaging of the Democratic Party, which is, of course, led by now Kamala Harris, is one that is not tough enough on crime. When, interestingly, Kamala Harris, though, has a very mixed record, when she was a prosecutor, she was known for being quite tough on crime.
Yeah, I don't know if I would trust a guy who's a 34 felony convicted felon who the biggest engagement that he has with law enforcement is or crime related stuff, I guess, is giving pardons to literally every single friend that he has who has been convicted on crimes. Some people that are very, very hard to excuse his pardons for. So, yeah, I wouldn't trust Trump on anything related to crime.
I think people are more concerned about actual violent crime and theft rather than white collar crime. So even if, you know, even
really,
if
what was Occupy Wall Street about?
That was something people were obviously very concerned about at the time. But now we're in a different era. You're talking about another decade or 15 years. And here we are with violent crime rampant in the streets. We've got people being able to steal inside, you know, theft up to $900 at a local Walgreens is legalized. So there's a lot of crime happening that are really, truly affecting people. They're afraid. And it's the defund the police movement was very much part of the reason why police forces are not stacked enough with enough staff to handle this rise in violent crime. Why is there violent crime, by the way? Because of inflation. When the economy sucks, crime goes up.
I think like violent crime, I think is lower now, I think, than it was even at the lowest. I'm pretty sure it is.
No.
I know that
they lied on the statistics. It's not lower.
They weren't collecting from all of the states.
Well, if you're only going to collect stats from some states, from a handful of states rather than all of them, then you can claim that they're lower. Or if you actually change the definition of crime and you say that stealing up to $900 is not criminal, or if people are not reporting.
When you say
the
stealing up to $900 is not criminal, are you talking about stealing up to $900 is counted as a felony, or that it was just a misdemeanor, or that cuff, like, are you saying that you can just steal? I'm pretty sure what you're talking about is people classifying different amounts of theft, the difference between it being a felony and a misdemeanor. I don't think that it being not a crime at all is real. I think you just made that up.
You can look it up. Here in California, you can steal up to a certain amount, and you're not going to even, if you call the cops, they're not going to show up. So it doesn't matter what you've done.
These are two different things, right? Like calling the cops and them not showing up or not having enough people to, you know.
Why aren't there enough cops?
I don't know why there aren't enough workers for anything right now. What do you mean? Unemployment is incredibly low. We're looking for workers in literally every single field. We also don't have enough nurses or doctors.
You don't think the defund the police had something to do with that?
No, because in most of the states where they tried defund the police, it was a fucking disaster, and they ended up rolling back basically all of those policies.
Yeah, well, they can't get those cops back. They already left, so now trying to rehire them back has led to a decrease in the police forces. They're not going after a lot of crimes. You call the police, you're going to be waiting on hold for a couple of hours unless it's an active, violent crime that's happening to you right then and there. It is a disaster at this point. So
this is how the police have always worked. Yes, unfortunately, it sucks. But I remember when I had shit stolen from me when I was in fucking high school. Yeah, if you call the cops, unless you're actually getting murdered right now, the cops will tell you, like, hey, listen, come down to the station. We'll file a report. We can take some notes on the phone. And that's it. You're never going to hear again. If some shit gets stolen from you, you're lucky if your car gets reported to you. Maybe if it shows up at the right tow yard and they run the VIN and they give you a call or whatever. But yeah, cops don't have time to investigate every single petty crime that ever happens. Usually the priority is going to be responding to violent crime. But that's always. I mean, would it be nice to increase funding to police? Yeah, for sure. But I mean, cities only have so much money. You know, there are different motives that are pushing people in different ways, but the idea that, you know, we don't want to make it legal to steal stuff. What would even be the incentive for that? Like, we're going to make it legal so people can steal things so that we can piss all of our citizens off and lose our elections. And did California even do defund the police? Like, was that even a huge thing? Was funding for police in California ever even a thing? Like the reduction of funding for police in California, did that ever even happen?
Well, I'll give you a chance to respond, Kim. And then we have one last topic before the Q&A.
I mean, once again, the messaging of Democrats. So it's the messaging of Democrats has been look the other way, defund the police. Violent crime is not a real thing. Claiming that violent crime isn't up when in fact they're changing the definitions and manipulating the statistics in order to have it favor themselves, just like they do when they say racism's up. Claims of racism are up because they changed the definition of what is racism in order to collect more people as, you know, these statistics. Statistics and lies, right? Whatever the phrase is, but they've definitely been able to manipulate them. Crime is up, and they're not doing anything about it. Democrats have actively campaigned against doing anything about it with defund the police.
So most of the stats that I see for violent crime are show that violent crime is down now, even compared to where it was under the Trump administration. But I guess we're changing some definitions. I do think it's interesting looking at a Pew Research poll that shows that Republicans are far more concerned with crime than Democrats are, which is interesting to me because I would imagine most of the big cities where the crime is occurring are where Democrats live. So I don't know if it's just Republicans that are, you know, sitting in suburbia watching TV that think that violent crime is this huge issue that they're not even experiencing. That's interesting to me that in 2024, 68% of Republicans think that crime should be a top priority, as opposed to 47% of Democrats that are probably more likely to live in cities or big crime areas. So kind of makes me think that it's just a talking point coming from the radio that people aren't actually engaging in reality with, at least for the Republican side here. But again, that was my central concern at the very beginning.
This might be a good opportunity to jump into the Q&A. One question coming in from Otto is from Ukraine. Say, don't you guys think it is impressive that you guys started realizing the scale of Russian influence only now? You are 15 years too late. This might be also an issue in terms of Kamala on foreign policy, but I'll give you each a chance to respond to this.
Yeah, Russian intrusion is obviously a huge problem in our country. It has been for 10 years. But again, conservatives are literally brain broken on this topic and they cannot engage with it whatsoever. And they would rather screech and scream about the hook nose guy running AIPAC than they would about actual people in other countries that are trying to destroy the United States and our ability to have any kind of discourse here. You've seen it with bots that are spread like crazy across Twitter. You've seen it recently with the indictments that came out over Tenet Media. You saw it with the Mueller indictments for the Internet Research Agency and all of the other social media accounts that he exposed. We've seen it over and over and over and over again. But again, as soon as you bring up Russia, people's minds on the conservative side immediately, break in half.
Yeah, we spent about $32 million on that Mueller investigation that didn't actually result in any sort of Russian interference or meddling in our elections. They instead uncovered people that maybe weren't exactly honest to Congress. So there was some obstruction of justice or lying under oath that they ended up getting people for. But we really haven't actually gone and found this massive Russian interference in our elections.
Do you think that any really indictments picky. Came from the Mueller investigation?
Like I said, the indictments that came, were any of them because of Russian meddling? That there yes. was actual direct Russian?
Yes.
Who was indicted for Russian meddling?
There were 12 indictments made for Russian nationals that ran a company in the United States called the Internet Research Agency that came from the Mueller investigations.
And the Mueller investigation concluded that they didn't really have much of an influence.
No, that's not true at all.
That there was any real true even, influence in our elections.
Given that okay,
that's great, we just make stuff up. But hold on, to be clear, wait.
Too bogged
down. How much money did we waste on the Hillary email investigation? How much money do we waste on the Benghazi thing? How many millions of dollars do we just waste on the House's effort to
we
impeach
really to
Biden
keep,
and they didn't even
do
an impeachment vote at the end?
Moving.
Like, it's not even close.
This one from Richie Constitution says, Destiny, why do you always talk about Trump? I thought this debate was about Harris.
Because it's a two-person election. You're voting for the Democrats or the Republicans.
It's not a two-person election. I want to make that very clear. I am not voting for either Harris or Trump. There are other people running.
What other conservative candidate would you support?
I'm not a conservative, Destiny. I'm voting for Jill Stein.
You're voting for okay. I think that if you support Donald Trump, yes, I think you should vote for Jill Stein. That is an option. True.
Antonio Inguez, thanks for your question. Said Kim, do you believe the 2020 election warrants terminating the Constitution? If so, please explain how that is not a threat to democracy. If not, why support the candidate who said that?
Well, for one, again, I don't support the candidate who said that. I'm not sure if the candidate actually said that or if that's an exaggeration of a position. Of course, I do not believe that the Constitution needs to be terminated, should be terminated. There are disputes that happen every single day at the Supreme Court. The Constitution is debated and it is refined to this day through court rulings. So, take it to the courts. And that's what Donald Trump did. And that's fine with me. Anybody could take it to the courts.
Sommer, thanks for your question. Said, how would you grade each major candidate on their foreign policy? Strong or weak points of each? I suppose we'll just cover Harris, if that's so. I suppose if you want to cover Stein, that works. But we'll at least cover Harris.
You Steve want me will. To go? Is this a question for me?
This is for both of you. So if you'd like to go first, you're more than welcome to.
Jill Stein has excellent foreign policy. I think she's right on practically all of the foreign policy points that we have. Jill Stein, that is one of the reasons why I support Jill Stein. Is I think that she is the most consistent, truly somebody that is looking at each of the different conflicts and saying, this is not America's problem. This is not something that we should be involved in. Kamala Harris has very much a Hillary Clinton foreign policy. She actually deviates even from Barack Obama, who had more of an anti-interventionist. In fact, if you really wanted to compare it, Donald Trump has a slightly more Barack Obama foreign policy than Kamala Harris does. Harris takes a stronger stance, and she's more in line with Hillary Clinton. So if you like what Hillary Clinton has done, if you think that she did an excellent job with foreign policy, then Kamala Harris, I suppose you would think that she's got excellent policy points.
What is a Jill Stein foreign policy point?
Ending the genocide in Gaza.
How?
By stopping support of Israel. Israel is reliant on our support in order to continue doing what they're doing.
Okay, so Israel's not reliant on our support to continue doing what they're doing. They can absolutely fund themselves. I think that one of the biggest red herrings for basically somebody who is a paid foreign asset or somebody who just knows nothing about foreign policy is usually when they talk about peace a lot in their foreign policy plan. Peace is a meaningless word. Nobody wants peace. People want justice. It's very easy if somebody's invading your village and wants to take over your entire country or take over your entire city to say, oh, well, let's just be peaceful and lay down our arms and let them take over everything and steal our economy and lead our country and dictate to us what we ought to do. Nobody wants peace. People want justice. They want to feel like something is happening that is satisfying the desires that they have as a nation, as a country, as they are entitled to in the world. So when Jill Stein says things like, I want to defund our military by like 75%, when she's saying things like, I want to delete over 700 U.S. foreign military bases, when she's saying things like, I want to end all of our involvement in every single conflict ever, what she's actually saying is, I want to create more room on the planet to make the world multipolar. I want Russia to be deciding how Russia-Ukraine ends. I don't want the United States to have any involvement there. I want China to be signing deals between Saudi Arabia and Iran. I don't want the United States to be involved there. I want all of our foreign adversaries to be the ones that are dictating policy to the rest of the world. Because remember, just because the United States steps back from a leadership position doesn't mean nobody else is going to take their place, which is exactly what everybody that says peace, 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 like Jill Stein, wants to happen. They want other countries to be those leaders and not the United States, for whatever reason.
Any pithy rejoinders, Kim, and then we'll go to the next question.
Why should the United States be controlling the entire world? We don't even have the majority of the population. So when we go to talk about democracy, why should this nation that has 330 million be controlling a planet of 8 billion people, first of all? Secondly, we shouldn't have anything to do with these conflicts. They're not our conflicts. These are not our fights. If Israel can continue to fund itself, great. Why does my money need to go to their fight then, if that's the case? Then you should be advocating to stop sending support to Israel if they could take care of themselves. Why are we wasting my dollars?
Because I think the United States is probably the most moral country right now to head the world hegemony. I think that Europe has seen an unprecedented era of peace under United States leadership. What would be a country that would be better than the United States to take point on that? Is it going to be Russia, who wants to invade and rape all of their neighboring countries? Is it going to be China, who is abusing the entire continent of Africa and doesn't even give their own population the ability to vote in free and fair elections? What other country besides the United States would be best at the helm of the world?
Speaking of Russia, this might be a good opportunity.
Go ahead.
Rayval says, question for both debaters, is Putin a dictator? And will you denounce Russia's involvement with Tenet Media?
Is Putin a dictator? Yeah, obviously, of course.
I mean, what's a dictator?
A dictator is somebody that rules without having themselves able to be questioned by their population with free and fair elections. Oftentimes it's through a singular party. Oftentimes it's through a top-down authoritarian control, meaning they don't just control the state and the government like Putin does. They also control large swaths of the economy and the population through oligarchies, which he does. And they also tend to control the distribution of media through organizations like RT, which he does. That would be a dictator.
You just described the Democratic Party. I mean, so
which major media organizations the Democratic Party dictate policy to?
CNN, MSNBC, all of the liberal mainstream media outlets that are taking direct talking points, speaking in unison. We see this all the time when they all come out saying the same exact thing, tweeting it all out, all in unison, like they got talking points from the DNC.
If that's possible, then why did all of the media attack Biden and force him to step down? If Biden is a dictator.
Biden's not the dictator.
Who's the people behind?
Well,
the people are the dictator. That's called a democracy.
The DNC. It's not a democracy. Whoever chose Kamala Harris, because it certainly wasn't the people.
The voter. Well, we actually did when we voted for that ticket last time. You know, if Biden died, Harris would have also just stepped up to be the leader on the ticket. If Biden died, would that have been anti-democratic?
Should George Bush continue to be president because people voted for him once? So if they vote for him once, it's okay to just keep putting the person in over and over and over again? I mean, that logic fails. You have to vote every single time. That's why we have democracy. That's why
we vote in the elections, in the general elections. Yes, we do. We vote in the general elections. And typically, yeah, your incumbent does run again over and over again, which is what George Bush did. Yeah, that's what happens. Correct.
Of the general election.
Well, wait. Do we not feel like Putin? Wait, so is Putin not a dictator?
I don't know if he's a dictator. I'm not Russian. I don't really care.
Reval,
it's not my country. It's not my country. I don't deal with it.
Reballs.
Wait, so wait. Do we not care then? Because the United States has to oppose.
No, like, we don't have to oppose. We don't have to get involved with other countries and other elections. The Russian people are strong people. They're not children. If they want to make change, they will. I don't need them to come and make change for me in my country, and I don't need to go over there and make change for them in theirs.
What if they want to go and make changes in other countries? You don't think the United States or anybody else has an obligation to help?
Do you think that the United States doesn't meddle in other countries' elections or stage coups?
I have no idea what that question was about. I'm asking, if Russia wants to invade its neighbors, do you not think other countries have an obligation to help?
No, we don't have an obligation to help. If a country can't defend its own borders, then we can help. It's not an obligation.
Do you think that in World War II, do you think the United States should have stepped up to fight against Germany?
I think that the United States,
that's
for a long time, did
yes
not.
Or no question. Should
it's
we have
not
stepped
an
up
easy
to fight against,
yes or no
it's
question.
Such an easy yes or no question. Should the United States have stepped up to fight against Germany?
It's not an easy yes or no question. The United States decided it was in the United States' interest after the bombing of Pearl Harbor to go into that war. Prior to that point, the United States did not. So had there not been the bombing of Pearl Harbor, I don't know.
We don't even know if we should have opposed the Nazis. Okay, so let's say that you see something.
No, I'm not saying that you don't have to oppose the Nazis. I'm just not saying we need to go to war with every single person that we oppose.
I never said go to war with every single person we oppose. I just asked if we should have fought in World War II against the Nazis. They didn't bomb us. Japan did, right? Maybe we should have just gone to war with Japan.
Well, I mean, we largely did, but then we went into Europe. We were begged by England to go in, and we went in. I'm not saying, look,
the Soviets beforehand, right? The only reason the Soviets could fight is because of Lend-Lease. It's because of our funding of the Soviets to give them enough raw materials. I think it's a really important point. I think it's kind of crazy that we can't say that Putin is a dictator, or that we can't say that any country on the planet should have an obligation to help other countries.
I don't think there's an obligation. You can go in if you feel like you need to go in. If I was alive during World War II, I probably would have said, yes, we need to go in. But that doesn't make it an obligation. There's no obligation.
Don't you have an obligation to your own people to create a better world?
Yes, you have an obligation to your own country, your own people.
So let's pretend for an instance. Let's say we don't have a child's view of foreign policy. What if a country was invading Mexico to the south and the country was called the kill all people country and we saw them about to invade Mexico? Wouldn't it behoove us to help Mexico to resist the invasion of the kill all people country before they're on our border?
It would probably be in our best interest because Mexico's on our border. So we wouldn't want them coming into a nation that's on our border. So yes, that would be something that we would probably want to do. But again, it's not an obligation.
I hate to do this. Rayball has another question. They say, for both, please explain Trump's platform for the 2024 election. I'm not sure why.
Well, he has a concept of a platform. I think we know that much.
I mean, I don't know. I don't pay much attention to Trump's platform because I'm not voting for Donald Trump.
Gavin Lockhart says, Destiny, what are your thoughts on the Kamala Harris FBI prosecuting the, am I saying this right, Uruhu movement for having Zoom meetings with a Russian? Because that seems completely undemocratic and anti-speech.
Can you pronounce it again? Or what was this question?
Yeah.
Uruhu, U-H-U-R-U.
U-H-U-R-U.
Oh, the Uruhus. So what was the question about the Uruhus?
They say, Destiny, what are your thoughts on the Kamala Harris FBI prosecuting the Uruhus movement for having Zoom meetings with a Russian? Because that seems completely undemocratic and anti-free speech.
I don't know anything about that particular issue, so I wouldn't be able to speak on it.
The Uruhus were charged with, it's similar to sort of what's gone on with Tenet Media a little bit, where they were accused of being Russian assets, essentially funded by Russia. They went to court. It was the Biden administration that went after them. They went to court and they actually just won their court case. They are found to not be Russian assets at all.
Got it. This one coming in from, do appreciate it. Chase Hatchett says, you got the one. Sommer, thanks very much, says to both. There's a movement in the far right now with figures like Fuentes, Gariepi, Destiny's buddy, that are disavowing Trump since he's tamer / not pushing as hard on MAGA issues. Curious to get your opinions on that as left-leaning people.
If you court crazy racist people, you're obviously going to get crazy racist people as part of your movement. It's not surprising at all to me. I don't know what else to say.
I don't know anything about these people enough to make any sort of characterization about them.
Otto says, I wonder if Kim knows that in other Democratic countries, parties just introduce their candidates without having primaries.
I don't compare ourselves to other countries. I would like to see a democracy in my country, and that's what I advocate for.
This one from George Connolly.
Also, seems like, wait, so for this Uruhu group, so they were convicted of conspiring with a Russian agent. They were acquitted on one charge, and they were convicted of another, so they didn't beat everything, right?
I'm not 100% certain. I believe that they beat their case.
Okay, they were handed a mixed verdict. You sounded very certain, but it sounds like they were actually convicted of conspiring with Russian agents, but they were acquitted of the more serious charge, which would have been acting as agents of a foreign government. So I'm guessing this is a type of FAR violation, but it wasn't the worst type of FAR violation.
Yeah, so they had some contact with Russians.
Well, no, it doesn't sound like they just had some contact with Russians. I don't think there's a federal charge for just having contact with Russians. There was probably federal charges, though, relating to conspiring with foreign agents and not making a declaration of that to FARA, which is the law of the United States.
Mm.
Folks, we won't be able to take any more questions. So do appreciate your questions, but we want to wrap up by a decent time. So for sure, please, no more questions. George Connolly was, I think, a little bit late to the party. They seem to think, Kim, that you're for Trump. So they say, is Kamala becoming the nominee more or less Democratic than Trump's electoral plot and attempted insurrection? I think you'd probably disavow. So Richie Constitution says, Destiny, I don't want to speak for you, though. I want to give you a chance if you'd like.
I just don't. I think that it, whatever the procedure was that Trump was attempting after the 2020 election, going through the courts is the proper procedure. If there are other constitutional procedures that he was using in order to challenge that, I think that's completely fair. So I think it's fair for an American to challenge an election.
Chase Hatchett says,
to be clear, Trump wasn't just challenging the election. He was trying to break the law because he lost all of his election challenges, but...
This one from Jonathan Gendler says, Kim, there weren't presidential primaries before 1912, before 1976. You did not always need them to win them for the party's nomination. And say, go ahead.
Yeah, the country hasn't always been perfect. We've had a lot of dark moments in our history that have been highly anti-democratic. For example, slavery, or saying that blacks were two-fifths of a person. So we have evolved. We've become more democratic. We should be becoming more and more democratic as time goes on, as we become a more enlightened people.
You got it. Space Miner says, considering an ever-increasing nanny state backed by police powers, what would the enforcement powers of police look like under either opponent? I think they mean, in this case, Harris or Jill Stein.
What is the question?
Yeah, I'm not really sure.
Good question. They say, considering an ever-increasing nanny state backed by police power, what would the enforcement of these powers look like, whether it be from Harris or from Stein?
I don't know which powers they're referring to exactly.
I would say, in my conversations with Jill Stein, she's very much against the surveillance state and this labeling of misinformation. So I would just think that under Harris, you know, we've seen a definite... under Democrats in general, a ramping up of these ideas of surveillance and misinformation and flagging people and tagging people. So I would say that there would be a ramping up of that. I think, I'm not really sure what the question was. That's my best answer.
You got it. I think that fits it. Tip 35 says, Kim, thanks for coming on. Can you explain what the three, let's see, I don't know what that, Dan Shire says, for both, can you articulate any specific Biden-Harris policies that were detrimental to our economy?
Biden-Harris policies detrimental to the economy. The advocating for lockdowns was the biggest detrimental effect
advocating
on our economy.
For something? I don't think it's
a policy. Yeah, they were advocating.
And they happened under Donald Trump, so.
Well, Democrats were advocating for them. They wanted the lockdowns. It was, again, probably
we're
a political
point. We're not talking about Democrats.
Point.
It was Harris and Biden.
Well, Harris and Biden are the heads of the party, and they were directing the people that were in positions of power. Not only that, but Biden did do
Harris
mandates,
and Biden are not
which
the
definitely
heads of the party.
Affected
That's
the... They are. You don't think that the president is the head of the party?
No.
Who's the head of the party?
It would be the chair of the DNC or the chair of the RNC. Remember, if the president was the head of the party, then who would have... You already admitted this when you said that Biden was made to step down by the actual party heads, right? So
well,
even you don't agree with this.
The powers that were behind Biden. Yeah, he's supposed to be the party head. That is the way it's supposed to be set up. But they clearly have mechanisms to undermine that, which
okay,
is fine.
So then clearly he's not the head of the party. And when the lockdowns were happening, Biden wasn't president. So he definitely wasn't the head of the party then, even if we do say the president's head of the party. So... Yeah. Okay. Also, does the Green Party even have open primaries?
I'm not sure.
Hold on. If primaries are like one of the most important ideas of a democracy to you now, which for some reason is incredibly important, I don't think they have
open primaries. And that's a state by state thing anyway.
I think they all. No, it's not state by state. It's a private organization.
An open primary is state by state.
Primaries can be held however you want them to be.
It's state by state. Each party decides within each state how they're going to do their primaries. Yeah,
that is not true.
Some states you have to register for the party in order to vote in that party. Some states allow you to vote in the primaries without registering. That's an open primary.
States might change how you register for how you vote, but how a primary is run is decided by the party. That's why, for instance, like Nebraska
By each say, state. Each state decides. That's why some states have caucuses, some states have primaries, some force you to register as a member of that party in order for you to vote in their primaries. Some states don't. You just have to
request
the ballot.
If Florida said, we're going to change it so that we're actually going to be the first party in the next primary cycle instead of Iowa, would Florida be allowed to do that?
Florida is not allowed to dictate the elections in Iowa. No, not even the Florida Democratic Party.
Not the elections. Let's say Florida says, we know when the Iowa caucuses are. We're going to hold our primaries before Iowa. Do you think Florida would be allowed to do that?
Yeah, Florida can do that if they want to do that.
Because what happens is both parties say, okay, well, we're not going to count your primary votes. That's what would happen.
Well, they can say that, but that doesn't mean that the state can't actually hold that primary. They certainly can. This was contested in the Democratic Party. The Democrats just had this challenge.
I'm sorry, but I don't think you understand that these are private parties. I think you think that these are like part of the
government.
I understand
that they're private parties, but the states decide. So when New Hampshire decided that they were going to hold their primary when they wanted to hold their primary, that was challenged. And the New Hampshire primary, the New Hampshire Constitution says that they go before a certain number of states. And when Democrats wanted to make that change, Democrats did not get to unilaterally make that change in New Hampshire. They actually had to contest it with them in court.
Because this is the agreement that the parties have with the states. But if a state decided that they just don't want to participate or if they want to do it differently, they can do that. But then a party can say, okay, well, we're not going to count your primary votes. They don't have an obligation, the delegates, to listen to states. Otherwise, every state would want to go first, right? Why does Iowa and New Hampshire get to go first?
Sure, but that doesn't change the fact that the states decide, the state chairs, the state branches of the party decide. So I'm saying with the Green Party, back to the point, is I'm not sure how they operate in every single state.
I think they just do electors. I don't think they actually have open primaries where citizens vote at all, which is interesting to me, given that that seemed like such an important part to you for things to be considered democratic and you support Jill Stein.
There were plenty of other candidates that ran in the Green Party. I interviewed many of them. So they did actually have challengers to Jill Stein. They didn't just anoint her. They had several other people. People voted on that.
Well, if you're going to say that, then in that case, that was the exact same thing that happened in the Democratic Party. There were delegates that had pledged for Biden, and then Biden supported Kamala Harris when he stepped down, and those delegates decided to vote for Kamala Harris. They could vote for other people they want to.
Yeah, they didn't really give any other options, and they pretty much told everybody that they had to support Harris, and that was it.
Delegates are allowed to vote for who they want to. But
thank you very much, Sommer, for your question. Ask, what do each of you think about the recent assassination attempts? Obviously on Trump.
You shouldn't be trying to kill people in the United States for our political system, so probably not good. Don't do that.
Right.
This one from Leslie Lewis says, did Trump purposely block the right-leaning immigration bill that Republicans have wanted for years, yay or nay?
I think we covered that.
This one from Dan Shire says, Boredom says, why are there so
many...
Wait,
that was a yes then, right? He did intentionally block that. That was
I'm sure, just like Democrats blocked him previously.
What was a Democratic leader who shot down a bill that had the support of both halves of Congress? What Democratic leader shot down a bill that had the support of both halves of Congress to pass?
Which bill are you talking about?
Well, I'm talking about the immigration bill that was going to be passed.
I'm saying that Democrats blocked immigration, blocked border bills previously.
And we already issue with this border bill. Well, sure, but you're just wrong. You're making a horrible comparison here. There was a bill that was ready to go that the Republicans and Democrats supported in Congress, and Donald Trump said, no, keep the border open. I want to win the next election.
So then Republicans apparently opposed it because he doesn't have the power to just say, don't pass this bill. You can't pass this bill. People had to actually vote on that, right? So a bunch of Republicans decided to go along with what he wanted.
Yes.
How is that any different than what happened when Democrats were also blocking any sort of border bills when Donald Trump was president?
Because Democrats not agreeing with a bill and not wanting to vote for it is different than an independent leader like a Hillary Clinton or a Barack Obama or a Biden saying, guys, don't vote on this piece of legislation.
How do you know how each Democrat felt? I'm sure that there were Democrats that actually did agree, but they went with the party line.
Because we can look and see what they say publicly.
Yeah, what they say publicly is to support the party line.
Okay, well, what they don't say, supporting the party line is different than this leader was telling us that we need to change our vote. The Republicans were on board with the border
bill. What's the difference? The party line is from the leadership.
The difference is that there is a party line that people probably believe in, and there are individual candidates that might put themselves over the party or the country, which is what Donald Trump did. The Republicans were ready to support a bill in Congress, and Donald Trump said, don't support it. I want to win the next election. Democrats don't do that. They might support or not support something because of what the party tends to support, because they tend to agree with it, which is why they're in the party, but that's different than one leader coming out and saying, hey guys, change your vote. We're not going to go ahead and vote on this thing. We're going to keep it open. Like when a Republican shut down the government, or like when they lose their speaker seat in the House, or any other monumental ways they fail in governing.
I mean, I don't know how you think you know what everybody in Congress is thinking individually.
Well, I can just look at their public statements and I can see the things that they say. It's pretty easy, actually.
Public statements in a democracy. Are different. Okay.
This one from Boredom says, why are there so many former, I don't know if they're, like I said, late to the party, or what? They say, why are there so many former left-wingers turning into rank-and-file Republicans? Maybe they're, in other words, I think that they know that you're not a Trump supporter, Kim. I think they mean other people. So I think they're trying to say that, for example, RFK is kind of falling in line and going, what are your thoughts?
Like a lot of Democrats are switching over to the Republican Party. I mean, I think we're seeing a shakeup of the parties, and we're seeing a lot of people from the right, like Dick Cheney, move to the left. I wouldn't say right to left. I would say perhaps the parties are shifting themselves. So we've seen, you know, like a lot of the intelligence community, the warmongering community, the military industrial complex, the Dick Cheneys of the world supporting Democrats. And we're seeing people who had previously been Kennedy Democrats now supporting Republicans.
I think what you're actually seeing is just there are some people very far on the left who are anti-establishment, who hate the United States, and these people find themselves in easy company when it goes to aligning with people on the very far right. And then I think that the fact that like the whole MAGA people are generally just anti-establishment means that it's very easy to get anybody else that hates the United States or hates the establishment or takes foreign money from people like Russia or Iran or China to all go and join their groups as well. So I think that it's a pretty easy alliance when you get a bunch of people that hate the state, hate the government, hate the institutions, and are just in general anti-establishment.
I don't pretend to know how people are thinking or feeling, nor do I have any desire to insult people.
You don't know what people are thinking or feeling? How do you make comments on anything?
I'm not going to
ever
sit here and claim that all of these people hate America when they're participating in the democratic process. I'm not going to make those types of characterizations or call them basket of deplorables or do any sort of insulting in my fellow Americans because they're participating in democracy and they decide that the person that you want to vote for is not who they want to vote for.
Okay, well, that's great. I will call out people who I think take money from other countries and they don't declare it. People like who worked under Tenet Media, other people that are still operating in this media environment, people like yourself, probably. I think it's worth calling those people out when they have other kinds of allegiances to other countries.
Are you claiming, did you just say that I'm taking money from any other, what did you just say?
Probably, almost assuredly, yes. And then number two, I think that it's worth calling out people that I feel have anti-American ideas. So for instance, when Donald Trump says he wants to destroy the Constitution or suspend the Constitution, I think that that's worth calling out. The Constitution exists above all three branches.
You're a piece of shit. Let me just say it. You're a piece of shit. Sorry, you just are. To make that kind of characterization of me, to make a claim that you know nothing about, I've never taken a single dime from any other country, not even this country. I am completely independent. And for you to make that sort of characterization, that sort of slander, that sort of slur right here in front of everybody, you're a piece of shit. And I speak for a lot of people when I say that.
I'm sure you do. And I'm sure they're all flying to Moscow right now, comrade. Thank you.
Going to this one, George says, does insurrection count as a violent crime? Or is that excusable? So they say, if it's Trump that's doing it rather than Harris, is it okay?
I think insurrection is always bad when you're trying to destroy the United States of America. But I don't know, maybe some people just consider that democracy or challenging things in the courts, I guess. I don't know.
I think it's perfectly fair to challenge elections. If that's what people want to do, people can challenge elections.
This one from I Killed Earl. Say, for Kim, how have Biden and Kamala's border policies been a failure when they've removed 4.4 million illegal immigrants while Trump removed 1.5 million, according to MPI? They say the
First of all, we've had a lot more people coming through the border at this point than when Donald Trump was president. A lot of it had to do with the entire globe shutting down and immigration just being low and migration being low around the entire globe during a certain period of time. But I think it's rhetoric, and that is one of the points that a lot of people who are very much against Donald Trump, they don't like his rhetoric. Well, rhetoric is what Democrats were using when they were basically saying that border crises were not really crises, that this was just some sort of a made up racist talking point or political point. And they were ignoring the border. So even if they are now scrambling to do something about it, it doesn't make up for the fact that they undermined the issue for a very long time.
Yeah, the undermining of the issue happened when Donald Trump told them not to pass a piece of legislation that would have helped with the border. Donald Trump undermined that more than any other person. There's a reason why Obama, and Piers loves to say this every time somebody does his program, why Barack Obama was called the deporter in chief. The problem with the border crises is that a lot of them are made up by Republicans. That's why Donald Trump humiliated himself on stage when he was screaming like a senile old man about watching Haitians eating dogs on TV, and he had no actual response to claims that were basically fabricated in front of a city council by a neo-Nazi on YouTube.
This is from Oni Chan, says, Destiny, seriously, why are my tax dollars going towards a genocide instead of improving our infrastructure?
It's not one or the other. Biden, thankfully, can fund our foreign interests, and he can do legislation to improve our infrastructure at the exact same time. We can walk and chew gum at the same time. Whether or not we want to support our allies internationally and what types of things we're going to fund domestically just have to do with the types of legislative accomplishments you can make in Congress.
This one from George Connolly says, Kim, was Trump's, let's see, I think we got James Zog says, after Pearl Harbor, Germany declared war on the United States, they were obliged because they had an alliance with Japan.
What was that? What is he saying?
They had said, after Pearl Harbor, Germany declared war on the United States. They were obliged.
Oh, I see.
Because they had an alliance with Japan.
Well, yeah, and we went to war, right? I mean, we went to, but it wasn't the obligation of going to, there's, the obligation is when you're attacked, your people are attacked, right? Then you do go to war. That is what people do. But the question was whether or not we're obliged to go to war on behalf of another country. We're obliged to go to war on behalf of ourselves. We can then resolve that war or engage in that war however we see fit, whatever we think is the best way to get to the end result that we want to get to. But we're not, my point was, we're not obliged to go to war. We do have agreements. We have NATO agreements, which does make us obliged. At that time during World War II, we did not. So I wouldn't call it an obligation. There are times that we can choose where we think it's in our best interest to go to war, or we think it's a moral interest to go to war, or an ethical interest to go to war, but I wouldn't call it an obligation.
I think that if we want to keep trade free and open, like we have for the entirety of the planet, I think that if we want to keep the world at relative peace, which it has enjoyed more than it has at any other point in history under U.S. leadership, I think that we have an obligation both to the entire world and to our own citizens to ensure that that peace stays as well as it can with the United States at the head of it. I don't think that a Russia that has invaded Moldova, that has invaded Georgia, that is invading Ukraine, that deploys its paramilitary to the Middle East and to Africa, I don't think that letting Russia control the world is good. I don't think letting China, a country that is or is not currently maybe genociding their Uyghur citizens, that has its eyes set on Taiwan, I don't think letting them control the world would be good. I think that for the most part, I think the West has largely enjoyed the U.S. being in charge of things. And I think that most of the world probably enjoys, for the most part, the United States being at the head of things rather than people like Putin or Xi Jinping.
This one from Pondering Politics and George Connolly have basically the exact same question, coincidentally. They had asked for Kim, they say, was Trump's electoral plot an attempted insurrection more or less democratic than the DNC replacing Biden with Kamala in particular?
I don't believe January 6th was an insurrection attempt by Donald Trump. Maybe there were people inside of J6 that, you know, you could maybe make an argument that there were some sinister individuals who were involved in that. But I don't think that there was some top-down directive that came from Donald Trump or anyone in the Republican Party.
How can you say that when you said earlier you don't know anything about what happened? You said over and over again.
I know enough to know that from the investigations that there was no directive that they found coming from the top down.
That's literally he's under indictment right now by the federal government, by Jack Smith. How can we say that we know?
Just to hear the rest of from Kim. Go ahead, Kim.
Yeah, there was no directive coming down from the top. There's no evidence of this whatsoever. They can make any charge that they want. They could charge you with anything that they want, Destiny. You can fight that in court. Trump will not be charged. He will not be convicted of an insurrection, of plotting an insurrection where there's no plans or plots that were there. So, you know, individuals behaving, however individuals behave, is completely different than coming from the top. So I don't think that they're, you know, that's... I don't think there was an insurrection coming from the top.
Yeah, I think it was pretty obvious that there was. I think that there was a plan in place the entire time to have Donald Trump subvert the peaceful transfer of power. I think he followed that up by goading everybody on the January 6th. When people say stop the steal, when they say we need Mike Pence to do the right thing, he's talking about stopping the steal of the election because he wants to remain president. When he's talking about Mike Pence doing the right thing, he's talking about Mike Pence choosing him to be president. When he tells people we're going to march down Pennsylvania Avenue and we're going to give them the strength that they need to do the right thing, he's talking about them objecting to the certification of the election, using intimidation and violence that they have to do it. And they were successful to some extent. They managed to delay the certification of the vote. But unfortunately, there were too many proud, strong men, most of whom were Republicans, people like Barr, people like Pence, other lawmakers and other bureaucrats inside the White House that managed to stop and thwart Donald Trump's plot to insurrect and coup the government.
You make a lot of assumptions about what a person's thinking inside of their mind when they haven't actually said anything. That is...
What do you think Donald Trump hasn't said that I don't know?
Well, he never said, go down there and stop them and do all... He said, we're going to go down there and peacefully protest. That's what he actually said. You then want to put something else in his mind and in his mouth, just like you do for all of your fellow Americans.
He said, stop the steal. What does stop the steal mean?
They believed that the election was stolen.
Okay,
that is something that is fine for a person to believe.
Okay, and if you think the election was stolen, and if you think the election is stolen, and you send a ton of people down to the Capitol building where they're
peacefully protest,
why would you peacefully protest a stolen
election? That's what
he
said.
He said,
we're going to go down there and we're going to peacefully protest.
He didn't say that. No, you're putting words in his mouth. He never said that quote. That you just made. You just invented that quote.
Then you tell me the words that he said when he said, go down there and violently take it.
No, he said, we need to fight like hell. You need to fight like hell or you're going to lose your country. He said, we need to give these weak Republicans, you know, something to fight for. We need to give them a backbone. We need to help the strong ones. They're going to help us. Like these are, he made these statements over and I can read you 20 statements that he made. It was an hour speech.
You make things up. You make things up about what people are thinking. You make things up about what people are saying. You're making it
up. I haven't made up a single thing. You just made up a
fantasy land. You live in a fantasy
land.
You need to focus on facts. What do people actually say?
I do focus on what people say. You don't even know what the legal theories
were.
You think
that all these people that support RFK Jr. are just hateful. They hate the country.
Yeah,
they hate
a lot of them
America.
Do. They do. Absolutely.
Oh, see,
1,000,000%.
Look, you're just making stuff up.
What am I making up? You haven't said a single thing I'm making up.
Tip 35 says, this is our last one. Thanks for our, I got to tell you, folks, we really do appreciate our speakers. It's been a true pleasure. We've got one last question, but I do want to remind you, they are linked both in the description box and in the title. You can click right there on the hyperlink in the title. And they're also linked in the podcast, as this debate will be on the podcast within 24 hours. You can find our guest links in the description box. Even if you disagree with them, folks, there's so much value to going to the original source, going and hearing it straight from the person. So highly encourage you, check out both Kim and Steven's links. Tip 35 says, Kim, can you think of a nation with a better form of government than the United States? If not, then isn't America one of the best nations to lead the world?
Yes, the United States is the best country on earth, and there is no other country with a better system than ours. And that is why we have to protect it. And we have to strengthen it, and we have to constantly work on our democracy. Otherwise, we can easily lose it. We cannot take it for granted. We have to understand that our system is delicate, that it was, that it is to be cherished, and it has to be protected. And that means democracy must be protected at all costs. And I do believe that America is the greatest country on earth, and we have the best system on earth.
Thank you very much, folks. Want to say thanks so much for tuning in. Click on Kim's and Steven's links. Hear it straight from them yourself. I want to say thank you very much, Steve and Kim. It's been a true pleasure to have you tonight.
Thank you very much.
I'll be back in a moment, folks. So stick around. I'll have a post-credit scene about upcoming debates.